For the Dallas Morning News, I'm Belen Hollers, a writer and fellow for the editorial board, and this is a special audio report. On June 24th, the U.S. Supreme Court overruled Roe v. Wade, the 1973 case that originated in Dallas County and legalized abortion nationwide. Now, as the nation grapples with the high court's decision and the debates that come with it, we wanted to better understand those who think there is still common ground. Today we have Sarah Danmoff, a Dallas-based social worker and writer, who contributed a chapter titled One Christian's Perspective on Abortion to the anthology A War on My Body by Paxton Smith. And we have Destiny Herndon De La Rosa, who is the founder and president of New Wave Feminists, a consistent life ethic organization that works to protect all life from womb to tomb. Thanks for joining us, ladies. The first question is, what would you say to the other side if they would listen? Destiny.
I think, surprisingly, I actually do get a lot of people to listen because I listen first, right? So when people explain to me why they're terrified about Roe being overturned when that was just a potential, you know, now it's a reality, I listen to them. I hear their fears and I understand their fears. I can actually relate to them as a woman who was without health insurance for 12 years in Texas and knows how hard it is to access a lot of services here that are very necessary whenever you're facing pregnancy, whether it's intended or unintended. And so I've found that when I listen to people's fears, their true story, not talking points, not the back and forth Facebook arguments we get into where we share links to our favorite articles, but what's your story? Why is this so important to you? And then I can tell you what my story is, why it's so important to me. And when we do that, we end up finding so much just human middle ground, because I think that a lot of the powers that be want us to feel very divided on this, but we're not nearly as divided as we think.
Sarah, how about you? What would you say if the other side listened?
Well, this is an interesting question for me because I don't consider myself on either side in particular. I don't put pro-life or pro-choice because I think the best arguments from each side are good ones. And so I tend to speak to both. And even in the chapter that I wrote, I had people very strongly on both sides contact me and say, thank you for speaking for us, which was humorous to me because I felt like, are we listening to each other? So from the pro-life side, asking questions, I think usually is the most helpful. Like what Destiny was saying, people want to say they have very strong feelings. And so just asking, do you believe it's a life in the womb? And when do you believe life starts? And when do you believe personhood starts? And when you ask questions, then people have to consider what their answers are. And the same thing on the pro-choice side. What about when a woman's life is threatened? What about when she's been assaulted? How do we handle these more difficult things? Because most people are arguing with the worst points of the other side, the most extreme, but these better points on each side of the issue are worth discussing.
So Sarah, I kind of want to lean into that. As a Christian, how mm-hmm. did you arrive to your position? And though it is a bit more nuanced, how do you arrive to that?
Yes. So one thing is that the scriptures don't talk about abortion. They don't directly address abortion, though they do speak to the dignity of all life and the value of all life. And so it's kind of traditional for Christians to believe that life begins at conception, both based on the medicine, but also just as attributing those personhood rights to the life in the womb. And so I do believe that, and I am pro-life in that sense. However, there are a lot of things that are not addressed that are not explicitly a faith-based perspective that there's room to discuss in terms of the legality and the policies that are very specific, not just is it legal or is it illegal. That's a very narrow conversation that doesn't actually help us. It's when and why should it be? So if we get back to the Constitution, which is what the decision that was just made in Dobbs is actually about, it's just, we have the right to life, liberty, and happiness, and to the pursuit of happiness. But the right to life is what this debate is around. And it's so unique because there are two lives that may be in jeopardy. And so I think from a faith-based perspective that believes that there is dignity in all life, I also can't ignore the life of the woman and the life of the mother. And there are times where her life may be threatened by that life within her. And those are the times that we really have to talk about. And that's the gray space, because even in the medical community, it's not always a black and white answer, just like the point of viability is not a black and white point.
Destiny, are you religious? Is this how you arrive to your perspective?
No, not at all. I'm agnostic. I'm politically independent. So this for me really is about human rights and women's rights in a way that most people probably don't think of them.
So kind of going back to these questions that we've already talked about a little bit in the article, is there a space coming from pro-choice, coming from pro-life, where we can say, okay, this is how we can help women. Here's an objective line. Maybe we can't cross it on either side, but here are some policies we could support. Here are some things we could be doing together. Is that possible?
Absolutely. I would say it's not just possible. It's absolutely necessary. It's something that we have to start addressing. It's something that we should have been addressing for the last 49 years. It's something we should have been addressing even before that. And maybe we would have never had Roe in the first place, right? If we were focusing on the communities, the villages that people need, especially a person who's facing an unplanned pregnancy, we would have things like paid family leave. We would have policies that protect workers, that enforce accommodations from big corporations to actually protect them so that people aren't just surviving, but they're thriving. And these are all the policies that I feel like have kind of been at odds with a more conservative side that talks about the human dignity of the unborn child. There's times where I question their true belief in that, because it's always been about cutting off supply, not addressing demand. If they truly valued these lives, we could have saved millions of them in the past 49 years through basic economic strategies that would actually help families, that would have protected women and children and made it possible so that they truly had a choice. Because I will also argue that I think so many women don't actually feel like they have a choice. The decision to choose abortion is being made out of physical constraints, coercion, a society that uses abortion as a cop-out in a lot of ways, because it's much cheaper for your employer to pay $4,000 to fly you out of state to get an abortion than it is for them to have paid family leave and accommodate your time off and actually take care of you as a full person. So really, at the end of the day, we have to get out of this mindset of viewing people as products and just producers. We have to be communities. We have to see everyone's human dignity, the pregnant person and the child's. And I think when that happens, a lot of the controversy, a lot of the at each other's throats that we see happening will actually go away, because we'll no longer be settling for a status quo.
Sarah, same question. Is there any common ground?
So I would say that I see common ground in the area of prevention and in the area of women. And what I mean by that is that I think no matter which side you're on in terms of legality, most people can probably agree that abortion is not a wanted good. It is traumatic for the woman. So on the pro-life side, it's kind of obvious that the belief is it's traumatic for the unborn life because it ends that life. However, what I don't think is talked about enough, but I think is our place of common ground, is that it's traumatic for the woman. So a few years ago, this is just one example, Michelle Williams won a big award, and she used her speech as an opportunity to say that she could not, and she's an actress, she could not have gotten to the point she got to in her career if she hadn't been able to get an abortion, and there was a standing ovation. And I was heartbroken to think this is what, as women, we have settled for, because men don't have to do that. And as women, we shouldn't have to do that either. And that's a prevailing, predominant thought, rather than saying it's actually injustice to the woman to have to feel like they have to make this choice in order to have a career, because their children won't be welcome, because they don't have paid maternal leave, things like that. So I think that on the side that is pro-woman, I hope that they can get on board with that, and I think most of them can. And of course, the side that's trying to save the life of the unborn can as well. And so I think I've always said that Roe is not the end-all be-all. Obviously, it goes back to the states, and there's a lot to talk about, and I'm glad for those discussions. But regardless of what's happening with legality, I think we can fight for prevention and a decrease in demand and in a decrease in women feeling like there's a need. If there's enough of a support system, if they feel like they don't have to choose between college and a child or career and a child, or they're not going to be owned by their family if they're minors, which many of these women are. And I think that's also forgotten about. I think when we point out to the narrower pro-life side that many of these women are minors and that rape is underaccounted and that this is indicative of women not having justice in our society, that I just think that's the place of common ground for both sides.
What was it like for you when you found out on Friday that Roe had been overturned?
I was at home and I got offline. I thought, I need to read this before I read what everyone has to say about this. And I felt my first instinct was definitely some joy and some relief. And that is because I see abortion as such a negative thing, but it also is actually because I believe strongly that the state should decide it. And then I felt fear as well. I felt fear for the women who will be feeling afraid. I've been a woman with an unplanned pregnancy, and I've been a woman with high-risk pregnancies. And I know that there are women and doctors that are afraid of, what does this mean? What does this mean if there's those instances of threat to the health of the mother and miscarriage? And I knew a lot of women would be feeling afraid. And so I felt sympathy and fear for them. And also just for fear for continued divisive conversation. I think this is a real turning point where we could let it become, we have to talk now. We have to become like a jury where we're put together with all our different backgrounds, but we have to find consensus, or it could just become protests and talking past each other. So joy and fear.
Destiny, where were you and what did it feel like when you heard Roe was overturned?
I was actually at the National Right to Life Conference, their convention that they were having in Atlanta, Georgia. So this is kind of a lot of the old school people in the movement, the people who have been there since 73. And I was in a teen session and, you know, it had just started and we heard the news and all the adults ran out of the room, leaving me in charge. And I'm like, that's a bad idea. I shouldn't be in charge of any of the youth. But I think I was shocked, even though we knew it was coming, I wasn't prepared for it. And so I finally, an adult came in and took over and I walked out into the hall and I heard people cheering, and I'm going to be really honest, like, I didn't feel that way. And I also felt like that was wrong, right? Like, I'm supposed to be cheering. I'm supposed to be that person. And so I went up to my hotel room and I started crying, and not a huge crier, but this definitely was just such an overwhelming conflict inside of me, because yes, I believe in the human dignity of the unborn person. I believe that they should be protected. But I also live in the real world, and it's 2022, and I know the reality of what this looks like, that pregnant people will be ordering abortion pills. They will have access to that. They're going to be scared. We're not doing anything to actually give them a more equitable world. We're just taking something away. And right now, there are so many women who are incredibly terrified, and I just wept for those women, because I get that, you know, like Sarah, I had an unplanned pregnancy myself. I was the product of an unplanned pregnancy. My mom was 19 and had to leave college and move back home. And so my feminist side is very frustrated that we don't have a world that allowed her to continue on this path of success. Instead, it changed the trajectory of everything. And I'm very frustrated because I don't think we've made great strides in that area. But I also know that when I faced my own unplanned pregnancy at 16 years old, the only reason that I was able to choose life for my son and have a 21-year-old right now is because I had support. I had a roof over my head, food in my mouth, clothes on my back, good health insurance, quality health insurance that I could actually access, prenatal care. All of these things made it possible. I didn't care at all what Ted Cruz thought of what was going on with me. Like, most women don't. When I'm getting the calls from the girls who are terrified right now and considering making an abortion decision, those are the questions. My parents are going to kick me out. I have nowhere to go. My boyfriend, you know, I'm scared that he's going to do something to me if I continue this pregnancy, right? He's telling me I have to get an abortion. Like, this is the reality. And I have spent my activism working in the reality, not the legality side. And so, what are we doing to change women's reality? And I think that's where my heartbreak came from, because I just saw an option being taken away from them that, yes, protects the unborn person in the womb, and I agree with that. But I also didn't see us doing anything to be a calm in the storm like I had, like my mother had, the reasons that we were able to thrive. And I think that's where we have to get. I think I'm very afraid that there's a lot of pro-life people who are going to pack up and go home and say job well done, or just move efforts to states that don't have restrictions and put all of their energy and time and money, you know, there. But those aren't the only states that people are facing unplanned pregnancies in it. I mean, we know that. And the states that do restrict still need these policy changes. And to truly have, you know, I talk all the time because I'm a feminist, I'm obligated to, but we talk about patriarchal systems. Like, we live in a patriarchy, a world that was built for men by men. It was never meant to accommodate female fertility. And so when you're looking at Roe as the top rung and the thing that was impossible, nobody thought it was going to happen, but we're finally here and we've done it. Oh my gosh, you guys, bad news. That was the bottom rung. That was the easiest thing we could have done, because now we literally have to change the foundational parts of our culture that do not lead to a life culture in any way. Otherwise, abortions aren't going to go away. We're going to see, you know, a rise in quote unquote miscarriages. We're going to see a rise in women being harmed because they are taking the abortion pills at home. Nothing has changed for them. The desperation you feel when that second line shows up is so incredibly real. And until we do something to address that, we don't live in a life culture, and this wasn't the victory we all thought it was.
Let's talk a little bit about the reality of Texas. So we know that we have a trigger law. We know that Ken Paxton is ready to enforce pre-Roe statutes. And though a court allowed 6 weeks to be okay again, we know it's going to be short-lived. So with those realities, setting aside abortion itself, I mean, what do we have in this state that you think either needs an update or is actually functional? I mean, do we have anything that is helping women? And from what I'm hearing from you is no. So I guess I'm asking, am I missing something?
I think that yeah, there are major deficiencies in so many of our systems, especially when it comes to housing, childcare, transportation, healthcare for women in rural areas in Texas. Those are the top four things. And I've gotten to the point where I'm not going to wait on the government to save us. We have to save ourselves. We have to save each other. We have to step up, and you find that woman in your neighborhood or the pregnant person who is facing an unplanned pregnancy, and you say, what do you need from me? Do you need a ride to your doctor's appointments? Do you need childcare? What obstacles are standing in the way of you being able to continue this pregnancy, and how do I remove them? And if we all did that, if we all gave of ourselves and took care of the person right in front of us, I think we would see a shift in this culture in Texas. I think a lot of people like just voting for things. I think that's the laziest form of activism, or arguing on the internet. But the amount of time that you spent doing those couple of small things, like, who can you actually serve? What struggling mother, maybe she's not even abortion vulnerable, she already has her children, you can take her a meal. You can go over and watch her kids so she can get a nap, because she's a single mom and she's working two jobs to provide for her family. Like, there are so many things that we have to step up and do, because the powers that be, I think, are very hypocritical. I think that for a very long time, they have been quote unquote pro-life, but in name only. They are only doing this so that they can get us to vote for them come election time. And I'm sick of that. I'm sick of waiting around for them to enact policies that actually create life culture. So we have to be the ones to create life culture, because at the end of the day, in the long run, I think we're going to see more changes than just the current influx that's happening in Texas. I think ultimately, if we do not step up, if people with pro-life convictions do not step up and start creating this culture right now, we are going to see such massive horror stories of women losing their lives, we are going to have such an extreme backlash that our nation will immediately go blue. We will see a complete radicalization and the codification of abortion access in the next few years. Like, I think this is a case where maybe a battle was won, but the war is going to be entirely different if people just sit on their laurels and do not actually step up and start taking care of the vulnerable in our society.
I want to ask one last question to you both, and it's really about asking questions, which is, where do we go next, and what questions do you both have next?
I think the question we should all be asking is, what can we work together on? You know, where do our agreements overlap, and where can we build power and organize to help the vulnerable in our communities? You know, are you passionate about the infant maternal mortality among women of color? That's something I'm passionate about too. Let's get together and work on that. Do we want to expand, you know, Medicaid? Let's get together and work on that. Where is it that we can come together in our excess? Because this is something that I've realized that's become very true to me, is we all have some level of excess. Maybe it's your pocketbook, maybe it's your time, maybe it's your physical space. You know, you have a room in your house, as Sarah said earlier, where you can not just take a woman's child from her, but bring the woman in and offer the support system that we know leads to life. Maybe you have an extra car that you were thinking of selling, but instead you can donate it to a mother in need, or you have time to drive her to an appointment. Like, there are so many places where we all have excess, and how do we come together, pro-choice, pro-life, activists, and say, can we join forces and build power with what we have to give the world? And can we create a community that serves women? Because at the end of the day, we all care about women. We all care about women. And we have to stop dehumanizing people who disagree with us, because if you are pro-life, you are in the humanizing business. That's what you've signed up for. So how do we humanize them, see them, work with them, and help women and children?
So two things come to mind. The first thing being, where should we have these conversations? And the answer being, not necessarily social media. I think that's a very basic starting point, but something like, could you bring this up with your family, with your friends, especially as one here who's speaking as a Christian? I would say it's important to have these conversations with your faith communities, with people, and that takes a lot of courage because it is divisive. But I think if you come about it the way that we've talked about, where it's, I really want to hear what you think, and I want to ask questions without a strong agenda to bring someone over to your side and just to listen. I think when conversations only happen on social media, it only gets more and more polarized. And so just that beginning small step of, maybe with my book club, we could read and talk about this. It's just those little things. And then someone from there might go and decide to take another step. And so where we talk about it, I think, is important. And then the second thing I would say is our culture toward children and a welcome of children. I do want to say, and because I work in foster care, this comes up a lot, not everybody is in the place to take in a child or take in a mother and a child, and that's okay. It's actually a small percentage of people that we need to do that, and we do need that. But beyond that, just someone who's willing to be a babysitter, just someone who's willing to always be there to listen, to talk, some of these smaller ways to be involved in women's lives are going to be huge. And to, at the grocery store, help with the toddler who's melting down. It's these little things that show children are welcome here. You're welcome to have a child, because we're all going to have that village mentality and help you with that child. Maybe not at the fullest extent of, you can live in my house. That might not be possible for everybody, but we can take turns babysitting and we can bring you meals. And so I guess I'm just focusing on those smaller things that, if enough people do them, will be massive.
I want to thank you, Destiny, and you, Sarah, for sitting here and finding some common ground and showing, I think, all of us that there are some places that Texas can work together. You can read more about Sarah and Destiny in my story, Texas Women Speak, If the Other Side Listened, online now at dallasnews.com. What did you think of today's conversation? I'd love to hear from you. You'll find a link in my email and our story online. If you want to hear more of our special audio reports, just follow the Dallas Morning News wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find links to all of our shows, along with a special membership offer just for listeners at dallasnews.com/listen. For the news, I'm Belen Hollers. Thanks for listening.